Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome to a special bonus edition of the show. And welcome to the top 10 forgotten EVs from current automakers. Now, you may know that the world of electric vehicles goes back a long time with vehicles like the Baker Electric. In fact, personal transport was electric before it was combustion. No. I've wanted to find forgotten EVs from car companies around today making great electric vehicles. And these were their first efforts or early efforts that were then projects discontinued, knocked on the head, and not taken any further. Now, you may say, why is the GM EV1 not on your list? And I will preempt that and say, well, I don't think that's a forgotten EV. There's whole documentaries about the GM EV1. And you ask many people, what was an early EV? They might name it. So, no. I've tried to find the cars that perhaps you never knew about, or if you did, that flew under the radar and that you forgot all about. So, let's dive deep into automotive history with the top 10 forgotten electric vehicles, pioneering EVs that pushed boundaries, tested technologies, and taught the car companies valuable lessons, and maybe, just maybe, led to the cars that you and I can buy today. Let's start our countdown. Number 10, the Volkswagen Golf City Stromer. Kicking off our list at number 10 is the Volkswagen Golf City Stromer, which actually spanned three generations from 1981 through 1996. Now, the name City Stromer comes from the German word Strom, meaning electricity. A nod to the powertrain. The first generation emerged in 1981, developed in collaboration with the German utility company RWE. It featured a 27-horsepower electric motor, 16 gel batteries at 96 volts, some way off the 1,000-volt architectures we see these days, and an 18.5-kilowatt output on the motor. Range was modest at 80 kilometres and a top speed of 100 kilometres per hour. Interestingly, unlike modern EVs with a single-speed transmission, the original Volkswagen Golf Electric had a four-speed manual box. Now, the second generation arrived in 1985 on the Golf 2 platform, bringing improvements, a 31-horsepower motor and 11.4-kilowatt-hour battery pack. Range remained disappointing, 50 kilometres. The third and final generation, based on the Golf 3 and made from 1993 to 1996. Did you even know there was an e-Golf back in the 90s? Was an advancement. Had a 17.3-kilowatt-hour pack, and it weighed 300 kilograms. Not the end of the world. They split it between the trunk and under the bonnet. 27-horsepower motor, and up to 90 kilometres of range. They used lead-acid battery technology. Well, the City Stromer emerged from the early 1970s research into electric mobility at Volkswagen, accelerated by things like oil crises and growing environmental awareness. VW built 120 electric Golfs for fleet customers and German utilities who used them for customer visits. The program ultimately ended in 1996. Lead-acid battery technology was too heavy and too inefficient for widespread adoption, and consumer interest remained minimal without any government incentives. Right, number nine. At number nine, we have the BMW E1. This was a purpose-built electric city car, unlike taking the Golf, one we just looked at, and putting batteries in it. This was showing remarkable foresight in design philosophy. It predated the BMW i3 by over two decades. Developed by BMW Technic in 1990, the E1 was created in response to California's zero-emission vehicle mandate, requiring 2% of new cars by the end of the 90s to be zero-emission. The first generation E1 was revealed at the 1991 Frankfurt Motor Show, featuring groundbreaking construction, an aluminium space frame chassis, and recycled body parts made out of plastic, keeping weight remarkably low, despite the 1990s limitations of battery technology. The body featured extruded aluminium sections and an outer skin made from recycled plastic, a sustainability-focused approach that would define the i3 20 years later. Powertrain specs were very impressive for the era. The E1 had a permanently excited rotating field AC motor, 32 kilowatts of power on the rear axle, 19.2 kilowatt hour sodium sulfur battery, just 200 kilograms, 160 kilometers of city driving, top speed 120 kilometers an hour, and you'd get to 50 kilometers an hour in less than 6 seconds. And when you came to recharge the battery, that would take just 6 hours from a standard outlet. The second generation E1, unveiled at the 1993 Frankfurt Motor Show, switched to sodium nickel chloride batteries, a Zebra batteries. Fascinating technology. We'll do a bonus about those one day. With 19 kilowatt hours. The new battery technology improved service life, range and performance and enabled regen braking that covered up to 20% of energy recuperation during deceleration. Tragically, the only first generation prototype was destroyed in a fire, ironically, whilst charging. Despite the second generation's improvements and successful programs, including field trials on in Germany, BMW never came to put the E1 into series production. The project ended in the mid-1990s as, ultimately again, battery technology wasn't felt to be ready. Number 8, the Škoda Eltra. Coming in at number 8 is the Škoda Eltra, a fascinating collaboration between Czech engineering prowess and Swiss business ambition that produced one of Eastern Europe's first modern electric vehicles. The Eltra story begins in 1989 when a Czech constructor competed in electric vehicle races in Emmen in Switzerland, which is interesting because it was a home-built electric vehicle with two 25-kilowatt DC motors and 8 lead-acid batteries. Now, this racer unexpectedly won and so caught the attention of a Swiss businessman called Bruno Frides, who requested delivery of 1,000 battery electric vehicles based on the old Škoda Favorit. However, Škoda, based in Mladá Boleslav, initially refused because of problems during the kind of post-communist transition. Eventually, an engineering division took up the project, developing a comprehensive conversion using Czechoslovakian components. The Eltra 151 was 20 horsepower and had an electric motor with electronics from Škoda. The powertrain used 14 6-volt, 180-amp-hour lead-acid batteries with a top speed of 80 kilometres an hour and a range of 80 kilometres. Power output was 85 kilowatts at its peak. Official collaboration between the Škoda companies began in 1991, but this was a delay to the original plan and it proved costly. By the time production started, the Swiss market had changed and had become more saturated by other products. Instead of the initial plan of 1,000 units, only several dozen reached Switzerland. And the person that ordered them, the businessman Bruno Frides, I didn't want the rest. Additional vehicles were sold to Germany, the UK, where they were called the Škoda Elmo, Norway, Sweden, Finland and Canada. Around 40 units remained in Czechoslovakia at the time, and the Czech Postal Service used them. Total production was about 200 units, I could find. There was some discrepancy in the research, actually, in the numbers, between 1991 and 1994, when production ceased alongside the Favorite. The Eltra represents an intriguing what-if scenario. What if the project had been on schedule? What if the original 1,000 cars had been delivered and wanted? Maybe Škoda would have been much more of an early EV pioneer. These days, they make incredible vehicles under the guidance of the Volkswagen Group. Number 7, let's talk about the Citroën AX and Saxo Electrique. At lucky number 7, we have the Citroën Electric City Car Duo, the AX, and the success of the Saxo, practical urban EVs that served French cities in the 1990s. The AX Electrique was 1994, based on the AX Supermini, a DC electric motor at 20 kilowatts peak output, 27 horsepower, and the motor drew power from a 16 kilowatt hour battery pack. So 46 miles of range, 75 kilometers in combined driving. Top speed was 57 miles an hour, 91 kilometers an hour. The AX weighed 995 kilograms, a veritable lightweight amongst modern electric vehicle standards. The Saxo Electric would what would follow in 1997, and that was Citroën and Peugeot's joint effort based on the 106 platform. And the Saxo featured similar specs, an electric motor with 11 kilowatts power, up to 20 kilowatts boost mode, like it, and 20 nickel-cadmium batteries from SAFT, each one weighing 13.7 kilograms for a total of almost 300 kilograms for the battery, the little Citroën Saxo. Also, liquid cooling for optimal thermal management back in the 1990s. It would do 91 kilometers an hour at a range of 56 miles on 90 k's. From the outside, both vehicles were identical to their petrol, supercar, like mini car looks. Only a charging flap on the front wing and badging revealed their electric nature. And both cars came with the petrol-powered heater to keep you warm. So you would still need to go and fill up a little jerry can or tank of petrol at the petrol station. They didn't want to use the electric power to heat the cabin. That would have devastated the low range already. It cost about 84,000 French francs at the time, and then you had to rent the battery as well for about $100, equivalent now, monthly. Both models addressed urban pollution concerns and provided practical zero-emission transport for postal workers, doctors, local government officials as well, and they made about 6,500 of them. All right, before we take a break, at number six, the Fiat Panda Elettra. Sliding into number six is the Fiat Panda Elettra, a groundbreaking vehicle, mass-produced by a major world manufacturer, unveiled in the early part of 1990 in partnership with an Austrian firm, Steyr Pusch. The Panda Elettra replaced the beloved 750 petrol engine with electric propulsion. The initial version had a 9.2 kilowatt DC series electric motor with 13 horsepower. The motor was complemented by 12 6-volt lead-acid batteries, two in the engine compartment and 10 in a robust steel container occupying the trunk. Total battery weight, 450 kilograms of batteries. They had to beef up the suspension and upgrade the brakes and oversize the tyres just to cope with the battery. Performance was modest, but looked fine for city use. The Fiat Panda Elettra achieved a 100 kilometres range and 50 kilometres per hour. Average speed would give you that 100 kilometres of range. Top speed, 65 kilometres an hour. This was for the city, though. In cold climates, once again, it had a petrol tank for a small petrol burner to heat up the cabin. Not sure I would have fancied that. The Elettra also retained the standard four-speed gearbox and clutch. In 1992, they introduced the new Panda Elettra 2. This version boosted motor output to 24 horsepower, or 17.7 kilowatts, and replaced the heavy lead gel batteries with new, efficient, light nickel-cadmium units. However, it was still much, much heavier than the Fiat Panda. Fiat aimed to demonstrate leadership in environmental sustainability and prove that electric urban mobility was feasible in the early 1990s. It served government fleets, postal services, and utility companies as well. The price, at the time, 25 million lira, was three times the cost of a Fiat Panda 750. Prohibitively expensive for a private retail buyer. Production continued until 1998, and several thousand units were eventually built. The Panda Elettra proved the concept worked, but not yet without energy-dense battery technology. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the top five. Stick around.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com. Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityCairo.com. That's AbilityCairo.com.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
All right, welcome back to our bonus podcast. These shows go out first on the Patreon feed, and 7 days later, they flick over to the free feed if you'd like your content first and early. Then have a look at what the Patreon subscriber platform gets you. $5, $10, maybe more a month if you're an organization. And this is how we put the podcast on the air and how I earn a living. So apologies for plugging that every so often. Right, number five. In our top 10 list of forgotten EVs from current EV makers, number five, the Ford Ranger EV. Halfway through the countdown, at number five, we have the Ford Ranger EV, a full-size electric pickup truck that demonstrated American automakers could build EVs when the law wanted them to, because California's zero emission vehicle rules, the Ford Ranger EV was made to accommodate those, or to accommodate itself to those rules. Launched in 1998, the Ford Ranger Electric ran through to 2022. A lead acid version and a nickel metal hydride variant. The lead acid setup was 39 8 volt batteries on two layers, 850 kilograms, whereas the more superior nickel metal hydride variant, originally available exclusively for lease in California, used 25 12-volt batteries from Panasonic in a single layer. These batteries offered a far superior performance, 95 amp hour modules, delivering 63 watt hours per kilogram energy. And the pack weighing 950 pounds, running at about a nominal voltage of 300 volts, which is not far below some of the more low voltage modern EVs all these years later. And 27.4 kilowatt hours is actually quite respectable. They had a Siemens AC induction motor at 90 horsepower or 67 kilowatts. Single speed transaxle driving the wheels. Real world performance was really capable, actually. 65 miles real world range. And that was done in the research I found on highway range testing. On a flat highway at 65 miles per hour would do 65 miles. EPA at 95 miles. Top speed was 75 miles an hour, but that was limited. And the 0 to 60 time, okay, that was 18 seconds. And it was heavy as well. The Ranger EV faced early teething problems because the batteries wouldn't always charge well in hot conditions. But Ford successfully addressed these issues. But then they saw the battery deg at around 25,000 miles was quite extreme. California's 1990 emissions rules required, as I say, 2% of vehicles sold by the big car makers to be zero emission by the end of the decade. And that was 10% by 2003. The cost before any kind of subsidies that might have been available was $50,000 at the time for the Ranger EV. Number four, the Volkswagen Electro Transporter. Coming in at number four is based on the iconic T2 van. This was Volkswagen's first electric vehicle in 1972. They made it with Bosch, Varta, and the German utility company. The Electro Transporter was effectively the ID Buzz of its day. Powertrain DC motor in the rear of the vehicle, developing continuous rating of 16 kilowatts, 22 horsepower. That would improve with later models. The most significant engineering challenge was energy storage. Lead-acid batteries were the only thing around in 1972. The pack was 850 kilograms. That was more than the Beetle weighed in total at the time. They put them in the floor of the vehicle, between the axles. Loads of reinforcement, as you can imagine. It was 2.2 tons. That vehicle. Performance reflected the limitations of the technology. 47 miles an hour, or 75 kilometers an hour, so you couldn't really take it on the autobahn. Range varied as well, depending on payload. And the Electro Transporter had a really innovative control system. Changing direction required flipping a switch forwards or backwards, like a modern electric vehicle. Despite these limitations, the Electro Transporter actually found its niche. The low top speed and limited range suits urban delivery applications. postal services, municipal fleets, in city centres. Volkswagen built the electro-transporter as a production model over several years in various body styles, minibuses, vans and pickups as well. I think they made about 120 of them in total. The early 1970s, with the oil crises and growing awareness of petroleum reserve scarcity, spurred research into electric mobility. There's groundwork being laid for VW's modern EVs, the e-crafter, the e-transporter, and like I say, the ID bus. And so, yeah, lead-acid technology was a massive weight penalty, and it wasn't ready. But they were trying. Number three, the Peugeot VLV. The bronze medal in our countdown goes to Peugeot's Véhicule Léger de Ville, light city vehicle, the VLV, a wartime electric vehicle that emerged from desperate circumstances. Peugeot were making EVs back in 1941 during Germany's occupation of France. The VLV represented Peugeot's response to petrol rationing imposed by the occupying forces. And built at the La Garenne factory near Paris, the VLV targeted doctors and postal workers who needed mobility but couldn't get around because of fuel shortages. It was minimalist. It was a tiny two-seat convertible. It was 2.6 metres long and 1.21 metres wide. The body made from aluminium to minimise weight. A single central headlight, a manual windshield wiper, and no rear bumper. Total weight, 350 kilograms in total. And half of that was the batteries. The rear track was notably narrower than the front track, eliminating the need for a differential for the rear wheel drive system. Propulsion came from an electric motor producing up to 2.6 kilowatts. Massive, depending on conditions. There were four batteries. There were 12-volt batteries mounted in the front of the passenger compartment for 4 kilowatt hours of capacity. Maximum speed, about 22 miles an hour. But this is, okay, this is wartime. We'll take it. Recharging speed required, well, firstly, a special device operating at 110 volts and took about 10 hours overnight. The VLV's control system had three pedals. One for the four-wheel drum brakes, another pedal to accelerate, and a special contactor that could boost speed when needed, not to escape the enemy, but to climb hills. The convertible fabric roof would be open in good weather and folded into the rear. 377 units were made. The VLV served postal workers and doctors. Built in 1942, the government banned sales of electric vehicles to private individuals. More devastatingly to the vehicle, German authorities banned the vehicle entirely in 1943, and production would cease with 377 made between 1941 and 1945. And some survive. They're museum pieces now, or in private collections, and they sell for huge prices, representing France's wartime ingenuity and early efforts by a big car maker to go electric. Number two, the Renault Celta Quattro. The silver medal position goes at number two to the unusual entry of the Renault Celta Quattro, which I'm not sure I'm saying that right, but not originally designed as an EV. It became one through special conversion programs in 1937. Renault, back in the 1930s, were making the standard version of the car in April 1934. Renault's response to Citroën's revolutionary Traction Avant. While Citroën gambled on a front-wheel drive technology, Renault stuck with rear-wheel drive, positioning the Celta Quattro as a car with experience, they said, a subtle dig at the early reliability issues from their French competition. So where does electricity enter the picture? Well, in 1937, Renault decided to make 35 electric taxis for the Paris World Fair, the Exposition Universelle Internationale, using the Celta Quattro chassis. These taxis transported visitors within the exhibition grounds. Specific technical details of these conversions were pretty scarce, actually, when I was looking this up. But this was Renault's, almost 100 years ago, first serious move into electric propulsion. Well, why make them for the World Fair? The 1937 exposition emphasised tech progress of the 1930s and modernity. EVs were seen as cutting edge. Well, they were. I mean, the contained environment of the exhibition grounds were perfectly suited to limited range electric vehicles. Visitors needed to be shuttled around a lot using short distance transport, and electric was the perfect solution. The Celta Quattro's conventional gasoline production ran all the way through to 1939, and 44,000 units of them were made. But the handful, the 35 special vehicles that were electric at the time, a complete experiment, represents an intriguing footnote in Renault's electric vehicle history. A glimpse into what might have been. And number one, the Toyota RAV4 EV. Taking the top spot at number one is the first generation Toyota RAV4. That's a vehicle that proved electric SUVs could do everything. They could be practical, desirable, and, heartbreakingly, subject to political whims. These were produced from 1997 to 2003. The RAV4 emerged from California's 1990 regulations on zero emissions. Toyota built the electric SUV on the RAV4 platform, a capable five-passenger vehicle. Both three-door and five-door variants were produced. The powertrain centered on a more advanced nickel metal hydride battery technology. 24 12-volt batteries from Panasonic were used, so 27 kilowatt hours. The pack was 450 kilograms and mounted below the floor. These batteries powered a front-mounted AC induction motor, 68 horsepower, and the motor drove the front wheels through a single-speed transmission. Performance exceeded expectations for a 1,500 kilogram electric SUV. Top speed, they limited it to 77 miles an hour. 0 to 60, okay, that was 18 seconds. The APA rated it at 95 miles. 95 miles EPA rated in the 1990s. 20 years later, some compliance EVs weren't getting much better than that. Toyota were early with electric vehicles. A real-world capability was 120 miles in some cases. The RAV4 EV came with a 60,000-mile battery warranty, demonstrating Toyota's confidence in early EV technology. They were durable. And a decade after they stopped making them, there were still about 500 on the roads in California. So why does the RAV4 top our list? And if you're wondering, long-term listeners know that I've been very frustrated with Toyota's anti-EV marketing. Why would I give Toyota the top spot on a countdown? Because its discontinuation perfectly encapsulates the frustrating history of electric vehicles in the 1990s and early 2000s, created only to comply with a mandate, not because a car maker wanted to. And big car companies like Toyota were the loudest voices, lobbying aggressively against electric vehicles. When California weakened their mandate in 2003, Toyota immediately cancelled the RAV4 program the minute they could, alongside GM's EV1. And unlike the EV1, Toyota did sell EVs during a brief 7-month window in 2002. So those that weren't leasing got to buy it and keep it. The cancellation was controversial. Lessees loved their RAV4s. They wanted to buy them, but Toyota, like everybody else, refused and repossessed them and crushed them. Automakers just treated them like compliance exercises rather than a genuine product. And the minute they could take them back and stick them in the crusher, because the political pressure that was exerted by big car companies that removed the regulations, they did it the second they could. There are some first-generation RAV4s surviving. They're cherished by their owners. Many still go later, 25 years on. They're still working. There's so much promise of what could have been in the 1990s and early 2000s. Now, Toyota would return to the RAV4 concept with a Tesla-powered second generation around 2012, 2014, but that's not a story for today. The first-gen RAV4 is our number one forgotten EV, not because it was some crazy space-age technology or groundbreaking design, but because it was a Toyota that everybody loved, but electric. And isn't that what we want from the big car companies? Hey, you make great cars, and Toyota could make great EVs these days if they wanted to, but you can make more money from selling combustion. Why all the car companies want hybrids or plug-ins or e-revs. They don't want to go electric, even though for decades they have been when forced, and when they do, the vehicles are really good. The RAV4 is the road not taken. The RAV4 is the lost decades. We could have been so far further ahead if money and politics and power and influence hadn't got involved. How much further along would we have been in cleaning up the air had it not been for those pioneering vehicles being cancelled? And there you have it. That's our top 10 forgotten EVs from car makers making electric cars today. From wartime necessity to Californian mandates, from heavy battery packs to some pretty interesting innovation. All faced a fundamental challenge, and that was battery tech isn't ready, and battery technology is moving at a crazy fast speed. And the other recurring theme is regulations. From wartime fuel rationing to California's ZEV mandate, you see that when the regulations change, the EVs stop being made. These days, though, the EV genie is out of the bottle. It can't go back again. We only go forward with clean, green, great electric vehicles. And that's your podcast for today. See you on the next one.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.